everyone. Welcome back to But What Will People Say? I'm your host, Disha Mazeppa, and this is a South Asian interracial relationship and lifestyle podcast. Welcome back for another episode. Welcome back, everyone. My guest this week is Hina. She is a doctoral student. She's Canadian and Pakistani. She talks about her interracial relationship, and one thing we both bonded over was being the oldest daughter in a brown family. Is eldest daughter syndrome a real diagnosis? No. Could it be? Probably. I'm sure a lot of you will find this episode to be relatable and will definitely make you feel like you're not the only one who has a lot of these feelings that we both shared on today's episode. So without further ado, here's Hina. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the show. I'm here with Hina. And Hina, welcome to the show. Tell the people who you are.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me here. Who am I? So I'm Hina. I am a Pakistani Canadian. I'm currently living in the U.S., more in the Midwest area. I immigrated to Canada when I was about 4 years old. So I identify a lot as being really bicultural in that way, Pakistani and Canadian, but ethnically my family's Kashmiri. Although my parents and I have never actually had the opportunity to live there, that's ethnically how we identify. A little bit more about just me. I grew up Muslim, Sunni, and I'm 31. I'm really, really happy to be here.
And we're excited to have you here. Tell us a little bit about your relationship and what you want the folks here to know about your relationship.
Yeah, so I'm in a marriage now, and this relationship in general is just about to celebrate our 7-year anniversary, which is, I don't know how the time already kind of flew by, but we're an interfaith, intercultural, interracial couple, and this is something I didn't really have a lot of exposure to when I was growing up, especially in, East Coast Canada. I didn't really know any other interracial, interfaith couples. So I'm here to kind of share my story and how that journey has been for us 7 years in the making.
So your guys' relationship started out, I'm assuming, long distance. Or at some point was long distance. Tell us what that was like, because I know a lot of people listening have definitely been in that situation while trying to keep a relationship a secret.
Mm-hmm. So, you know what? We actually didn't start long distance. We met about 7 years ago. It was around March, and it was after I'd finished my undergrad. I had moved to the small town that my parents were living in, and I was working at a gym there. We got connected through other people working at the gym and, started talking, and we'd known each other for quite some time. We became long distance. What was it? 4 years into the relationship. We started long distance in 2021. So we're going up to about 3 years of long distance now, which is by no means easy. It's required a lot of communication, a lot of figuring out each other, what we like, our communication styles, especially when it's not super easy when you're not physically in person with that person. So.
Okay. So we actually did the opposite. We started off knowing each other, and then you are still in a long distance, I guess, marriage?
Yeah. Yeah. I think the timeline on it is a little bit wild. So it was about, 5 years after dating, 4 years together in person, and then 1 year of long distance. I had decided during the middle of the pandemic that I was going to go do my doctorate in the U.S. in clinical psych. And so after a year of long distance, I decided I want to do this. I want to move forward with our relationship. So it was kind of the long distance is sandwiched in between. And then I'll be returning back to Canada this summer. So we're going in person, long distance for 3 years, and then back to in person.
All right. That's exciting. But I love that this is what I find interesting is when you decided to do something for yourself where you were already like in a very established relationship and then deciding we're going to go long distance because I want to pursue this thing. And sometimes that can be a hard discussion to have with a partner, a hard conversation to kind of work through, because it's like you almost feel like you have to pick between the two when you don't necessarily need to. Can you talk us through how that went for you, for people listening that might be in the same boat?
Yeah. I mean, even the way you just described it, very much from an early age, I felt pulled in multiple directions. Like I said, I immigrated to Canada with my parents and my younger sister when I was 4 years old. And I definitely have the whole eldest daughter of an immigrant family vibe going on in my life. That narrative is very, very strong. So, you know, much of it felt fragmented for me. I didn't really fully know how to be my own person, what my own goals were for a long time. I knew it was something I wanted to do. I didn't know how I was going to make it work, especially considering it's not just long distance for my partner, it'll be long distance for my family. My family at the time was also pretty sick of me being in school. I had already done my first master's degree, and you know, my dad especially was very, very much, you know, hey, when are you going to settle down? When are you going to start a family? Think about it. And kind of keeping all of this to myself, trying to figure out, you know, what is the life I want to live, was really hard. It was very much a split internally for me.
How did your partner handle it?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, my partner is fantastic in the sense that he has his own goals. He's very much differentiated and has his own sense of identity and creates a space for me to kind of figure it out on my own. He's very supportive of, like, you know, this is my doctor. And I think he knew that I wasn't going to be satisfied with my life unless I did this for myself. So either way, whatever path I chose, he was very much committed to making this work and giving me the time to decide. I think that's one thing that, like, across our entire relationship, you know, going on 7 years now, he's always provided me the safe space to figure it out on my own and have my own agency with things, despite what my parents might say, despite what I might even, you know, worry about internally as like a conflict. He was always that kind of reassuring space of like, whatever you do, we'll figure it out together.
Love that. Love a supportive partner. Did you start pursuing your doctorate after you guys were married?
That's a good question. No, I actually, what I ended up doing was I finished my undergrad in 2016. I started my doctorate in 2020. So I had a little bit of time in between. And, you know, we'd already been together. So even the decision of doing a doctorate after my first master's degree was very much like a joint thing of like, do I do it? Do I not? What are the doors that become open or the doors that remain closed for me if I don't? And yeah, so it was very much a joint decision of this is what Hina wants to do. But what Hina wants to do also impacts what we want to do as a team. So the doctorate kind of like branches out between. So I started the doctorate in 2020. We got married in 2022. And, you know, now it's going on 2 years of marriage soon. So
the reason I ask is because sometimes I feel like in South Asian culture, especially as this first wave of immigrant women kind of figures out their lives, marriage has sometimes felt like almost an avenue to freedom, like from living under their parents' rule. And then, like, because you mentioned that your parents were like, when are you going to settle down? You're still in school. You keep getting all these degrees. And it almost becomes like, well, if I get married, then my husband will let me do whatever I want. And sometimes kind of figuring out the difference between like, are we with someone because you want to spend the rest of our lives with them? Or are we using this as an avenue towards freedom? And it sucks to be in 2024 and think like women still have to do that. Because like for so many people, it was like, now I can make my own decisions because I have a partner who's willing to let me like figure my stuff out no matter how long it takes.
Absolutely. I really like that you brought that up because I have definitely seen it in my community and within like my own extended family. You know, I'm in this very small family that's kind of a little bit isolated in Canada. And, you know, I'm the eldest of three daughters, and we're all very, very outspoken. So I think from a young age, I was pushing a lot. I was pushing the boundaries. Like, I was the one who was going to sleepovers. I was making sure I'm getting like the education I wanted. But I absolutely relate to what you're saying, because even in, you know, now that I am married, I did tick that box for them. There's so much that I think that my parents relax about now or don't worry about, even with traveling. Like, I was traveling alone before I was married, but now I think there's like a sense of calmness that comes up for my parents that's different than before marriage. And it's unfortunate that it kind of felt like it needed to happen to give them that. But I absolutely see what you're saying in terms of like the broader community.
Yeah. So then within all of this, how did you bring your partner home to your parents throughout all of this?
You know, it was the year that I was alone in the U.S. Doing my doctorate was the year where I think I got a lot of clarity. I don't know if you've ever had a moment of just like, it's not totally eat, pray, love, but it's just, I need to be away from both my parents, both my partner, and just figure out what I want to do. And that year, I really came to have more clarity about what the future looks like for Hina. And I had decided at the end of 2021 that I was going to tell them. You know, it had been 5 years, and I don't know too many other people who let it go that far. And it was very much like an experience that felt unique to me, although I knew that there were other brown girls, other South Asian or interfaith relationships, intercultural, racial relationships going on like this. No one in my direct kind of community or social circle was going through anything like this. And so it really felt like an, you know, introspective journey for me. So I decided at the end of 2021, actually New Year's Eve 2021, I had proclaimed to my partner that, you know, I'm ready and I want to tell my parents. And we laugh about it because it wasn't a proposal, even though sometimes I like to call it a proposal. He always reminds me that I didn't ask a question. I just notified him that I'm ready to take this step. And, you know, after that, I had really just given him a piece of paper saying, I'm ready. And we talked about it. We went through the ins and outs. We went through all my worst case scenarios in my head and what support would look like, what I would need. And I had decided that I wanted to talk it through with a therapist. So I, you know, got myself a therapist, and, you know, we worked through a couple months leading up to the disclosure to my parents, and you know, what I was going to say, how I was going to say it, what were the reactions that I felt comfortable receiving, what were the reactions I wasn't going to be comfortable receiving, and how would I respond to those, and you know, what are the values that I'm moving in alignment with when I'm doing this gesture. So we worked together, and then I ended up disclosing to them. It was July 2022. And, you know, their reaction was nothing like I could have imagined.
In a good way, bad way?
In a great way. It was astoundingly positive. I think for so many years I had worried about, you know, I don't want them to think that I didn't consider them at all, that I completely discarded, you know, where we were from, how they raised me, our values, just even like in terms of Islam, in terms of, you know, being immigrants in this country. And I worried so much that they would think I didn't consider them at all in this decision I made in my life. And the reality was that I considered them so much at every corner, and I was so uncertain about how they were going to respond. But I think for us, it was a tough conversation, but we really came together around this idea of, like, you know, making sure we're honoring faith and moving in alignment with that. And, you know, they're okay with anyone who just kind of treats me well and respects, you know, the values that I was raised with. So they got to really know my partner, and it's been pretty smooth sailing since then.
I love that. Because I think, like you said, like, you went to therapy, you did all this prep of, like, almost catastrophizing the worst thing that could possibly happen, and then to be met with the opposite reaction is like such a relief, you know? And like, even on this podcast, so often, like, that isn't the case, but like, mm-hmm. I love hearing people just be like, actually, my parents did get on board, and it wasn't like the worst experience of my life. it's nice to have some hope, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, beyond hope, I think I don't know if you've had a moment like this in your life, but it was very much a corrective experience. If I didn't know what the lengths were, like what was the length of conditionality on the love that my parents placed. And this was a really big exercise of like, it's okay. None of the things that I was horribly afraid of came into reality. And, you know, they just want me to be happy. But I genuinely didn't know that. That part of my brain had no information. I wasn't sure. And, you know, I think maybe you can relate, or others listening can relate, in the South Asian community, that sometimes our idea of love that parents express looks different than maybe what we're exposed to in Western culture around conditionality and the right way to behave or expectations.
Yeah, 100%. We've all definitely been there. And it's interesting because every set of parents has their own length of how far that conditionality goes. And I think there's still a good amount of progress that could be made for many parents. But it's always nice to hear that that isn't always the case for every single, you know, brown girl. Especially like you do have that eldest daughter complex is what I call it, where our headspace is just always in that. And it is really hard to break out of, especially it like triples the pressure, right? It's not just, I want to bring this person home. It's like, you're the person everyone else is always counting on. So now what happens?
Absolutely. Well, Deesha, like, I think it's also important to talk about like, what is that family constellation look like? Like, I'm curious for you, are you the eldest sibling in like a house of all girls or other boys? Like how does the gender difference look like in your family too?
So I am the oldest of everyone, cousins and everything. We do have mostly girls in my family. I only have a brother, but all my cousins and I are pretty close. So we were always more like siblings. It is mostly girls. But yeah, I'm still the oldest across the board. So very much been carrying the team for a while. But have gotten, the older I've gotten, the better I've gotten at putting some of that down. Especially as like they get older, because I'm older by quite a big age gap. So as they've gotten older, just being able to like tell them what it was like to be me, but also feel like I actually don't have to sit here and like show up for you every minute of the day. Like, y'all can figure it out. It'll be fine. That's what I tell myself.
Yeah, I'm relating so hard right now. Can I ask, what's the age difference between you and your sibling?
Well, me and my brother are 12 years apart. But the other cousins, they're at least 8 years. So it goes 8 years and up. And so, yeah, when I was born, it was me and like my one guy cousin who's like a year younger than me. And we were born in India. But then like, and we just kind of like grew up in this like isolated fishbowl. And then all of a sudden these like other kids all showed up and we were like already kind of grown by then and had like no concept of even culturally what was going on, because we both grew up in towns with not a ton of South Asian representation. Also, like when you're 12, no one's sitting there thinking about like, oh my God, I'm a brown girl going to school with a bunch of like black and Hispanic and white kids. Like, you know what I mean? I was just like trying to like fit in and like watch Pokemon after school. Like, that was my life. I feel like the older I got, the more complicated it became.
Oh, absolutely. I love that saying where like a fish is just swimming in water, doesn't know that it's swimming in water.
Yep, basically.
Yeah, I think I resonate really a lot with that same echoing of being a parentified eldest daughter in an immigrant family scenario. I was really, you know, I moved when I was 4 and my younger sister was 1 at the time. And I have always been like a highly conscientious, you know, anticipating my parents' needs. I'm the type of like kid that's ready to go at the airport, got everybody's passports. I thrive on like solving my parents' problems, you know, and that became so much of my identity, is translating for them at the border or, you know, helping them write their first resume and things like that. And so I really felt like it was my job to help my parents and help raise my siblings, especially when my mom, she ended up having my youngest sister when I was 15. So we've got a 3-year age gap between me and my middle sister, and then 15 years between me and my youngest, which, like, I don't know, it really solidified this role as a parentified child for me. And it was hard, I think, even in making these decisions to go to school for myself, to pick a partner for me, because I felt for a long time, you know, that anything I did, my actions would reverberate into my family, and that I was carrying so much weight of, you know, what would people think about them? What would they think about my decisions? How would my decisions impact them? What if something went wrong, right? How would I stomach all of this? How would I carry all of this? And it was suffocating at a time. And I think it becomes so important to then choose yourself, like you're describing as well, right?
Yeah. And it's tough because on one hand, like, when you're the oldest, everything feels selfish because, just like you, like, I was like my brother's mom, you know, I was helping, making sure he took a nap and, you know, making sure he, like, just, like, did stuff, you know, in a day, like, taking him to the park. Like, sometimes instead of me hanging out with my friends, like, I was taking him to the park because, like, he wanted to go there, you know? And so then becoming older and having a pile of hyper independence issues, I, like, can't ask for help because I'm the one everyone goes to for help. And so even picking, like, my husband and being like, this is the person I'm going to marry, or deciding, like, this is what I want with my life. And I still don't think I've answered that question because I've never had the chance to ask it. So it's just something I'm still, like, there was definitely a point where I think after I left home where I was like, I took the space just like you. I, like, moved to another state and took time away from my boyfriend at the time and tried to figure it out, but was like, even now I had that moment of just like, when do I get to live my life? Like, when do I get to make decisions that are, like, selfish without feeling bad about it? So I think I'm still working through that one. Don't really know what I want.
Absolutely. And I like that you pointed out the word selfish is inherently a neutral word. We put these negative valences on it, like it's bad or not wanted, especially being in a collectivist culture. I think, you know, comes with that role a little bit, or that environment of, you know, well, you're picking yourself over everybody else. Whereas, you know, I'm a therapist in training, and I know very well that actually soothing yourself, taking care of yourself, is one of the best ways that you can take care of others.
Absolutely. But then at the same time, I don't know about you, but I get frustrated because I'm like, I'm finally at a point where, like, yes, I married a man who is a German Shepherd. Like, he handles it. And that's why it works. You know, like, for the first time in my life, I can turn my brain off. Right? Like, we go to the airport and I'm just sitting there like, la, 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 la. And he's there like, I know where all the exits are. I know where the passport is. Our flight is at this gate, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, can I go to Starbucks? Like, that's how my brain can function now. But it's hard when you've never been able to do that. But then now being at an age where people are like, oh, when are you going to have kids? And I'm like, I feel like I never just got to, like, not be a parent. And I got like 3 seconds of it and I'm really enjoying it. And I'm like, do I want to rock this boat? And like, yes, I do. But also I don't. It's a mess. It's a mess.
Absolutely. I also, like you, married a German Shepherd of a man, and, you know, very loyal, also type A like me, but I love that I can be my softer self around him. We can be the passenger princesses. We can kind of just clock out mentally. And I always describe it as I didn't have so much ambiguity about, like, what I wanted. I think the word ambivalence felt right to me, is that I felt like I knew what I wanted, but they were just pulling me in opposite directions, right? I wanted to have a good relationship with my parents, but I also wanted to be in this relationship with a man that my parents told me, you know, fit this demographic that they'd be upset or disappointed at some point in my life, right? So how do I navigate being pulled strongly in these different directions? It's really a lot of unlearning. It's hard to kind of, like, weave through that.
It is. And it's hard to feel like it can all exist in the same space. Like, yeah, all these trends about like girl dinner and girl math and passenger princess. I'm like, I'm finally in my girl era. Like my whole life, I feel like I've been in the driver's seat. I've made all the decisions. Like I put myself through school. I figured out how to get student loans. I figured out how to get an apartment, blah, blah, blah. And for the first time, like I get to be the passenger princess. And like, yeah, that's sure. We can file it under the trauma of never getting to be a kid. But like, I don't know how to work through that while also maybe thinking about like wanting to start a family and also like being a wife and being in a relationship and like filling that role and finding like where's the space for all of this. But I don't have an answer, but if you do, let me know.
Oh, I am in the exact same boat as you, right? I'm also 31 now, and I didn't expect to see myself here, to be honest. I didn't think I was going to get married because the concept of marriage, knowing the type of relationship I wanted or the man I was attracted to or the person I was with, like the concept of marriage for a long time was just like a mental block in my head. And now same with, you know, having kids. After having a 15-year age gap with my sister, similar to you and your brother, it's like you were doing a lot of child rearing already. And now that you actually have some time to not be so on edge or to be showing up as a caretaker, you actually have that room a little bit. You don't want to let it go. So I don't have an answer for you. All I can say that like is that I'm letting it kind of unfold and hoping that, you know, I'll be guided to what I need in the future. But it's okay in the meantime.
Yeah, I read somewhere that it was some quote. I don't know where I saw it, but it was like, you don't have to be hopeful about the future. You just have to be curious. And I think that's what gets me through it most days. I'm like, we're just going to roll with it and figure it out. Like, one thing I can give myself is I've always been like, the universe will figure it out for you. If you just let it happen and let the cards fall where they may, you can figure it out later. It'll be like, because I am a type A Capricorn control freak. Like, I love a list. I love spreadsheets. Give me a deadline. But like, now that I'm working my way out of that, I'm realizing how much fun I have just like rolling around in bed, having a bed rot day, playing video games. Like, for the first time in my life last year, I got to take a day off of work because my favorite video game was coming out. And I was like, I'm going to get it that day. I'm going to drink a milkshake, eat candy for a living, and play video games. And I looked at my husband, I'm like, I'm an adult teenager and I don't care. It was a great week of my life.
I love that for you because I am also like type A Capricorn, which it feels like I haven't allowed myself to really play or have that inner child come out in a long time because I've been having to, you know, mother other people. And even in terms of like my career pursuits, it always felt like so much pressure, so much is riding on this, considering like all the sacrifices my parents have made and, you know, not giving myself that room to just be and to even be taken care of was really, really hard. My partner is classic, loves to do acts of service, and accepting help unprompted was definitely a learning curve for both of us.
Yeah, that's a journey in and of itself. But in the area of being the oldest daughter, there's also the pressure South Asian culture puts on like the honor of the family, like you carry all of it. Do you ever feel like that was something that weighed on you?
Yeah. I mean, I just noticed I took a big exhale and it lives in my body rent free, especially being, I think, the eldest in a family of three daughters. My parents were definitely the classic Pakistani couple that wanted the eldest to be a son. They wanted a son over and over again. So each of us, they were kind of hoping to have that person, to have that kid who would be kind of carrying the quote unquote, like typical honor for her family. And I always felt that pressure of kind of living up to it and excelling where I could academically, career-wise, or just in general, you know, even my interest in sports, my interest in athletics, how vocal I am about my preferences. There were a lot of just traits around masculinity or the idea of masculinity that I was gravitating towards because I wanted to fill that role, I think. And so having the gender and culture intersect there definitely had an impact on my life that I continue to carry it, you know, in the sigh or in my actions, right?
Has there been anything that has helped you maybe carry less of it?
You know what? I like what you're saying about, you know, picking yourself after all these years. I think it's just been a learning process over time. I came to kind of realize that at the end of the day, it's me, it's my life. And as much as I want to do the people pleasing, I want to do, you know, I want to be the helpful, you know, good girl, good daughter, at a certain point, that stereotype or that desire became almost nauseating to me. It felt not strong. It felt misaligned to who I really am, because I, at my core, I'm very outspoken. And, you know, to kind of bend myself, bend my preferences, including my partner, towards everything my parents would want, just felt like I would never truly be happy there and that I was just silently suffering. And so I'd rather not live a life like that. I'd rather just do what I really want to do, because at the end of the day, the time passes anyways, and I have to live with the consequences, right? So just learning that over time, I think, is what really got to me.
Yeah, I feel that. I used to do the thing where I would try to bend my partner to like fit as close to the perfect version of what my parents wanted, like trying to prove that like he could be brown and he does understand brown culture. And then I was like, this is stupid. I didn't marry a man for pretending, like a white man who was pretending to be brown. I married a white guy. It just is what it is. Everyone's just going to have to get on board. And so I just like eventually hit a point where I was like, yeah, I don't care. Like, you just take it or leave it. It is what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Same with me. It's like my partner loves to watch Stacey films, and, you know, that's like a point of connection for him and my parents. And, you know, I really didn't know for a while what my parents were going to be okay with or not. And, you know, you're right. It is what it is. This is literally a white Canadian man trying to quote Shah Rukh Khan, and like, you know, he's never going to fit all the boxes that my parents laid out. Like, I'm not going to fit all the boxes that my parents laid out for me in life, and living with that without being bothered by it is such a superpower now.
It is. It took, I don't know about you, but it took me a while. It took me a good amount of distance from my family, and it took a good amount of time just like being out, almost distancing myself from the community as a whole and realizing like, it's actually fine. Like, you know what I mean? Like just stepping away from it and not letting the whole what other people are saying or thinking. Because I noticed that when I would bring my husband into quote unquote brown spaces, and as a kid who like grew up in Temple, has a family very involved in her temple, like me showing up at the Mandir is like the prodigal son coming home. Mm-hmm. I don't go to Temple anymore. I do. I don't go to their temple anymore. I was like, I'm just going to go to a different one and not tell you so I can find a piece of myself somewhere else without like the constant like judgment and hovering and like internal need to prove that like, oh, look, like my husband's participating. Like, I don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah, I totally resonate with that, too. I think I've been lucky that my parents, the relationship between my parents and my partner has really reunited me with my spirituality and given me an opportunity to kind of, I don't know, restory that in a way that definitely felt, you know, punitive or like it was forced on me when I was younger. And so now that everybody's kind of jiving, I have the freedom to do this. And you're totally right that having even just your own space and you can make the dinner that you want, dress the way that you want, gives you a little bit of freedom from expectations that I think just like lifts the log that's kind of crushing you, and you get to kind of wiggle out and actually do what you really want to do. And so I'm in a better place to tolerate other things that my parents may want to exert control over now, because in the grand scheme of my life, I'm doing what I want. I'm living authentically to my values. I'm curious, though, for you, if this has come up after marriage, whether, you know, there are other avenues that they start kind of policing. I'll share a story that recently happened with me. Is even going to dinner with my parents and my husband, my parents are all over me about, you know, make sure his plate is full. Make sure you're never letting his plate go empty. Make sure you've asked him if he wants this. Is he comfortable? Is he bored? And taking on this like caretaking role. And I don't know if that's happened to you even since marriage.
Oh, yeah. All the time. Constantly. Especially the first year. It's been 5 years now. So everyone's laid off a little bit. But that initial year was just that. It's like, make sure you're serving your husband. Like, go get a chair. He can't, like, they're like, he can't sit on the floor. And I'm like, okay, he's not that flexible. I know. Or like, even traveling, there was this like weird hyper fixation on like, okay, we let them get married. Now we have to make sure they're happy. But like, in the strangest brown parent way of like, if I went somewhere, so like I would go on a girls' trip, and if my aunt called and she'd be like, oh, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, I'm like out with my friends. Like, we're on a trip. She's like, oh, where's Michael? Where is he? Like, is he mad at you? Or are you supposed to be there by yourself? I'm like, what are you gonna do? Call my mom? Like, it's like that kind of stuff where like, you must be in a fight if you're somewhere without your husband. Or like, if we were out somewhere at a gathering and like me and him weren't attached at the hip, like this was some weird Bollywood movie, it was like, are you guys fighting? Is he unhappy? Does he not like being here? And I'm like, actually, literally nothing's happening. I don't even have an explanation for you. Like, you just made up like a fake scenario in your head. So I like don't know how to address that.
Absolutely. I think the subtext that I see from that kind of dynamic, even in my own relationship too, is like there's some sort of role that I'm always not fulfilling or that I'm responsible for fulfilling and that I seem to be missing, right? That even the pressure of the relationship succeeding, you know, once you get to marriage and beyond, even of making this work, I feel falls on me, at least the way that I perceive it in my family dynamic. Obviously, my partner and between the two of us and our dyad, we don't see it that way. It's very much like 50-50. But when I'm with my parents, it's like, you got to make sure you're keeping your husband happy. And any deviation from that is somehow on me.
Yes. Like, if this relationship doesn't work out, it's because you did something wrong. Or if they ever look upset or annoyed, it's because you as the woman did something wrong. Yeah, I've definitely had those arguments. I think that it hit a point where I just snapped a couple times. And then they just kind of stopped. So I don't know if that was an effective method, but I just kind of lost it. And I'm like, you need to stop making up fake problems in your head. Like, I don't have time for this. And it was just like, figure it out. Like, if I think one day, you know what happened? One day, I think I just went off on my mom and I was like, if I wanted to be in a crappy marriage and be a housewife all day, I could have just done what you did, which is mean. It was mean, especially because my mom is not a housewife. This woman literally cures cancer for a living and, you know, is actually not in the world's most unhappy marriage. They actually do have like a weird definition of love. But in that moment, it was just like all 31 years of being aggravated just like came out. But it was enough. Everybody laid off.
I feel that. I wonder if I might actually just put that on my pocket for a later day, a rainy day. I'm only 2 years in, so I don't know if it just gets better after five.
I think like it's not that it gets better, it's just like the fucks left start to run out. My therapist calls it like my fuck jar. She's like, there's only so many fucks you have in your jar to give. And once you run out, like, that's it. There's just none left.
I love that. I'm literally going to see my therapist after this today, and I might bring it up to her, right? It's like never ending sometimes. I'm like, how am I so fused with these people that like even the most minor of like comments I somehow absorb and adopt as like, you know, I have some sort of say in the matter, or I'm responsible for all this stuff. Like, I don't think I can physically keep doing this. And that's, I think, where the healing is starting to happen. I'm realizing that it's just not sustainable.
Yeah. The day I realized nothing I do would ever be enough was like the most freeing thing. Cause I was like, it doesn't matter. I could win the Nobel Peace Prize. I could buy Buckingham Palace. I could move to the moon. They'd be like, but you married the wrong guy. And I'm like, whatever, you know? And it's like, what I always tell listeners here is like, when are you going to start to live your life? Like when they die? Like when do we choose ourselves? And yes, you feel guilty about it. Like even that day I snapped at my mom, I went home and cried. Like it wasn't like a moment of a win for 30 seconds and then I left the place and I cried because I felt bad. But it was just like, then we moved forward. And you kind of just keep having those moments and like giving yourself grace that like it might feel like you spent a month taking 2 steps forward and then after 10 minutes you took 10 steps back and like you just keep on keeping on.
Absolutely. This is something like I think it overlaps for me as, you know, the eldest daughter in a South Asian immigrant family, but also as a therapist, right? This need to kind of keep everybody magically happy all the time and to onboard it as my own personal responsibility or reflection of my worth is really kind of not okay and borderline delusional, in the sense that it just highlights how much I think enmeshment or fusion happens in families. You know, I wasn't put on this planet to on my husband. I wasn't put on this planet to make sure my parents' lives were as easy as possible. You know, like I'm worth so much more than that. I have my own dreams, my own interests, my own values, and I'm entitled to living a life that's according to that, right?
And you're right, but we come from a culture where women kind of exist to serve other people. So if you ever make a decision that is just for yourself, even if it's something as small as like getting your nails done, it's seen as selfish. And I've learned that sometimes it's just not worth not proving anything to anybody, but like seeking that validation from like my mom or dad or anyone in my culture, where like sometimes it wasn't worth even sharing my wins because it wouldn't lead to a positive outcome. Like I remember distinctly my husband at the time, was my boyfriend, threw me a graduation party when I got my master's. He threw it at his house, big party in the backyard, and we didn't invite any of my family. Like, it was just my friends, and that's it. Because, well, one, I think he might have still been a secret. I don't remember. But also, just, like, me telling my parents I got my master's was just met with, like, okay, cool. Like, when are you going to get married? You know? Yeah. Or just, like, you know. It just wasn't, and it's tough because when being the oldest now, it sucks to feel like the guinea pig. Because everything you didn't get, you get to watch the younger kids receive. Or in my case, I have a brother who is 12 years younger. Watch him get treated completely differently than I did when I was his age. And I didn't see it until now. And it has almost taken seeing like, oh, like you support all his dreams and goals. Like you're encouraging him to pursue his higher education, his career, to like look at schools out of state, all these things. Whereas like I was told to play small. I was just told like do just enough so that you'll be a good enough housewife. You know, it's like go to whatever school is closest. Don't look at out of state schools. You're not going to go there. You're not allowed to leave home, like all these things. And I think that's where a lot of like for me, my resentment comes from, is like being told to make my world smaller to fit the South Asian narrative of what I'm supposed to be in the world versus now watching them build a completely different idea of the world for my brother.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Oh, that's a hard one to hear, I think. And it's speaking a lot to the intersectionality of it all too, like absolutely cultural, gender-based, family order, and, you know, even like immigration status, right? It's a tough experience, I think, to one go through, but then to try and explain that and all that comes with it to a partner, you know, it's not easy.
I don't know that I've ever explained it to my partner. I mean, like, he gets it to some extent, but I think it almost helps to have someone who, like, doesn't always get it, because he'll just, like, say whatever comes to his mind about a topic, because he'll be like, but why? That's silly. I don't know. That doesn't make any sense. And sometimes I'm like, you know what? You're right. It doesn't make any sense. I don't know why I'm losing sleep over this. So having that outside body is quite helpful for me. I know it's not always for everybody else, but like that for me is always like nice to just have someone be like, that's stupid. You shouldn't do that.
That's so, he's so pure. He's so not infected yet by this.
Yeah. And, like, he, like, really has to remind me, like, one of the things he's always reminding me, like, because I am that kid who's trying to make sure her parents are figuring it out, even though, like, maybe they didn't always do that for me. And he's like, you can't help people who don't want to be helped. So drop it. He's like, I'm like, how could you say that? Like, they help with blah, blah, blah. And he's like, they're adults and they don't want your help. He's like, you offered it. You told them what you thought. You said this is the best route. What they do with that information is not on you. I'm like, yeah, okay, fine.
So true. So true. I think that's speaking a lot to like the phase of this process that I'm at, where, you know, after telling them and now kind of the trajectory since marriage and my degree and everything, I really came to learn that shrinking myself and molding myself around others or what they expect or want from me is not only a disservice to myself, but it's a disservice to them and the relationship, because it's suffocating growth. It's not giving them an opportunity to be adults or to figure out things on their own, because no one's going to be around forever, not them or not me. And it's kind of an existential kind of given at this point.
It depends on the day with me. I don't know about you, but like some days I'm like, I'm going to go live my life and like do all these things. And then some days I'm just like crabby and annoyed and angry and resentful. And then some days I'm like, no, it's actually going okay. Like everyone's getting along. And like I try really hard on this show to be as positive as I can be, because I know how much the whole interracial thing is so isolating for so many people. Cause like you, it's like, we know there's other people who dated outside of the culture, but like, we don't know who they are. So we're just here by ourselves.
Absolutely.
But sometimes it's just like being okay with the hand you were dealt. I think that's what it is. That's where I get stuck. Like some days I'm fine and I feel like I'm moving through it. And then some days I'm just so angry about it.
Oh, yeah, I hear you. It's kind of like accepting them for who they are, but also like trying to figure out where you can push and like advocate and want things to change.
Yeah, it's a journey. Well, this has been an insightful conversation. We're nearing the end of it. But my last question is always the same to all of my guests. If you could leave them with a piece of advice or some words of wisdom, what would it be?
My advice would be do everything that you possibly can to figure out what your values are, because the movement towards or away from them, you can't really figure out until you know what the anchor is, and the anchor is supposed to be your values. Yeah, that was, I think, the changing point in my life of like what really guides me, what really energizes me, what are things that I can't live without. And by things I mean like people, experiences, you know, career trajectories, the excitement I get from, you know, doing therapy with others, or, you know, my life's purpose, right? And I think I grew up so much thinking about my parents' values and how I fit into them that it took me a little bit longer to figure out what mine are, and then all the ways that I was kind of forsaking mine or sacrificing mine for theirs. And now I'm in a place where I know what's mine. I know the edges of my experience and where others start to kind of encroach in, and I can do a better job of like differentiating the two and staying true to what's important to me, what I can't live without. So that would be my thing. Just find out what's really important to you. What are your values? Who are you? What kind of a person are you? What kind of a life do you want to live? And I know those are huge, like big esoteric questions. Yeah.
But important questions to ask nonetheless. If people wanted to find you online or connect with you, where could they find you?
They could find my Instagram handle at Healing with Henna.
Fabulous. I'll link that down below. Thank you so much for being a guest.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for tuning in, guys. Make sure if you enjoyed this episode, you leave us a review on iTunes. You can find the show on all major streaming platforms. You can find me on Instagram at Disha.Mazeppa. You can shop my Etsy shop, Disha Mazeppa Designs. Find out everything you want to know about this show at DishaMazeppa.com. And if you or someone you know would like to be a guest, you can email bwwpspodcast@gmail.com. And I'll see you guys next time. Bye. This podcast is hosted and produced by Disha Mystery Mazeppa. Music for the show was created by Crexwell.